You are listening to RudolfSteinerAudio.com. If you are listening to the podcast of this, it is located at RudolfSteiner.podbean.com. Please consider becoming a patron. As well, there are two publishing houses, SteinerBooks.org in America and RudolfSteinerPress.com in England, who are the sole publishers of Steiner into English and have given me permission to do these recordings. Please consider patronizing them as well. This is a reading of a Collected Works, Volume 93, by Rudolf Steiner, entitled A Temple Legend, 20 Lectures. Mostly they are listeners' notes and some somewhat abbreviated stenographic reports. This is Lecture 10, which is listener notes, entitled Evolution and Involution, as they are interpreted by occult societies. Given in Berlin on the 23rd of December, 1904. In my former series of lectures, I have been speaking about occult schools and secret societies, and I think it right today to bring this whole course of lectures to a close before we pass on to a different subject next time. A week from now, I shall speak about the meaning of the days connected in the church calendar with the Christmas festival, most especially about Epiphany, which follows on the less important New Year festival. The lecture today, therefore, will be more in the nature of a conclusion. The question might be asked, what is the deeper meaning of such secret societies, and what is their whole purpose in world evolution? To such a question, my answer would be that they have a real connection with the way in which beings in this world evolve and make progress. If you wish to develop yourself, you know that different kinds of exercises are necessary toward this end and that they are available. You have heard of Hatha Yoga, Raja Yoga, and other exercises of different kinds by means of which societies and brotherhoods connected with occult science have initiated their members. Somebody might say, all this surely could be attained without these secret societies. But I can tell you, and in the course of the lectures, you will realize it, that the world cannot do without such societies. To put it bluntly, it is quite unjustifiable to speak in public in the style of the Manifesto of the Freemasons, which I read to you a fortnight ago. One cannot attain to what is usually known as immortality unless one is to some extent familiar with the occult sciences. The fruits of occult science do, of course, find their way out into the world along many different channels. A great deal of occult knowledge exists in the various religions, and all those who participate deeply and sincerely in the life of a religious community have some share in this knowledge and are preparing themselves for the attainment of immortality in the real sense. But to subsist on the knowledge of this immortality and the feeling of belonging in the spiritual world, in concrete experience and with full awareness, is still something different. All of you have lived many times, but not all of you are conscious that you have lived through these many lives. However, you will gradually attain this consciousness, and without it, man's life is lived with incomplete consciousness. It has never been the aim of occult science to inculcate into man a dim feeling of survival, but to impart a clear, fully conscious knowledge of onflowing life in the spiritual world. And there is a certain great law which governs the progressive development of consciousness in all future stages of life. Namely, it is what man works at to help others attain such consciousness, which contributes the most to its development. It is an apparently paradoxical proposition. Everything a being works at without aiming at developing its own consciousness helps to maintain that being's consciousness. Take it as an example the building of a house. An architect builds a house. He does not build this house for himself, but undertakes the task of building it for reasons which have nothing at all to do with himself. You know well that this is very seldom the case. There are many people who, to all appearances, are not working for themselves, and yet in reality they are. A lawyer, for example, is to all intents and purposes working for his clients. Part of his work may well be selfless. But the real question is one of earning his living. Whatever men do in business merely for the sake of their own livelihood, to the extent that their business only serves that end, just so much is lost in the way of spiritual gain. On the other hand, everything that is introduced into the work for an objective end, everything that is connected with the interests of another, helps to conserve our consciousness for future evolution. So that is quite clear. Now think of the Freemasons. In the original arrangement, they gave this injunction to their members: build such buildings as make no contribution at all to or have nothing to do with your own subsistence. All that has survived of the good old Freemasonry are certain charitable institutions. And although the lodges have lost their living roots in the ancient wisdom and occult knowledge once in their possession, these charitable institutions are evidence of a humanitarianism which, while it is empty of real substance, still persists and is cultivated as a tradition. Selfless activity is something that belongs to Freemasonry. Freemasonry did originally urge its members to work in the service of humanity, to build into the objective world. We are living now in the epoch of evolution that may be called the mineral epoch, and our task is to permeate this mineral world through and through with our own spirit. Grasp exactly what this means. You are building a house. You fetch the stones from some quarry. You hew them into the shapes needed for the house, and so on. With what are you joining this raw material obtained from the mineral kingdom? You are joining raw material with human spirit. When you make a machine, you have introduced your spirit into that machine. The actual machine does, of course, perish and become dust. It will be broken up. Not a trace of it will survive. But what it has done does not vanish without a trace, but passes into the very atoms. Every atom bears a trace of your spirit and will carry this trace with it. It is not a matter of indifference whether or not an atom has at some time been in a machine. The atom itself has undergone change as a result of having once been in a machine. And this change that you have wrought in the atom will never again be lost to it. Moreover, through your having changed the atom, through your having united your spirit with the mineral world, a permanent stamp has been made upon the general consciousness of mankind. Just so much will be taken from us into the other world. It is a fact that all occult science consists of knowing how a man can act selflessly in order to attain the greatest enhancement of his own consciousness. Consider how certain men who have known this very clearly have been so selfless that they took steps to prevent their names from going down to posterity. An example of this is the Theologia Deutsch. Nobody knows who wrote it. Outwardly, there is only the man from Frankfurt. In quotes. He therefore took care that his name could not even be guessed. He worked in such a way that he merely added something to the objective world without asking for honor or for the preservation of his name. By way of comparison, let it be mentioned that the masters, as a rule, are not personages known to history. They sometimes embody themselves, when it is necessary, in historical personalities. But this is, in a certain respect, a sacrifice. The level of their consciousness is no longer compatible with any work for themselves, and preservation of a name does, after all, involve work for oneself. It is difficult to understand this rule. However, you will now grasp that the Freemasons' aim is this: as far as possible, to do their work in the world in such a way that it is concealed in the cathedrals, in social institutions and organizations, in charitable foundations. for selfless deeds are the real foundation of immortality. The latter is the reflected image of selfless deeds in the outer world. They need not be of great account. If someone gives a coin to someone in a selfless way, then that is an action that is to be understood in that way. But only to the extent that it was selfless does it become immortal. And very few deeds are selfless. A good deed may be very egotistical, when, for instance, it creates a feeling of comfort. Good deeds spring extremely often from selfish motives. If a poor man lived among us, had no roast meat at Christmas, and I feel the need to give him some in order that I may feel justified in eating my own roast meat, that, after all, is egoistic. In the Middle Ages, no one could say, who had built many of the cathedrals or painted many of the pictures. It is only in our epoch that people have begun to attach such value to an individual human name. In earlier epochs, more spiritual than our own, the individual name had less importance. Spirituality in those days was directed toward reality, whereas our epoch adheres to the delusion that what is merely transient should be preserved. I have said this only in order to indicate to you the principle on which these secret societies depended. It mattered to them to efface themselves altogether as personalities, and to allow what they did to live only in its effects. And this brings us to the heart of the secrets. The fact that some particular thing is kept secret is of less importance than keeping one's own share in the work secret. Everyone who keeps his own part secret thereby secures immortality for himself. The rule is therefore clear and unambiguous. As much as you yourself put into the world, that much consciousness the world will give you back. That is connected with the greatest universal laws. You all have a soul, and you all have a spirit. This soul and spirit are called upon to reach, one day, the highest level stages of perfection. But you were already there before your first physical incarnation. You were first physically incarnated in the preceding races, after the time of the Hyperborean and Polarian epochs. Before that, you were purely beings of soul. But as beings of soul, you were part of the world soul, and as spirit, you were part of the general world spirit. The world soul and the world spirit were spread around you as nature is spread around you today. Just as the mineral world, the plant world, and the animal world are around you today, so were the worlds of soul and spirit spread around you then. And what was once outside you is now your soul. You have made inward what to begin with was outside. What today is your inward part was once spread about outside. This has now become your soul. The spirit, too, was once spread around you. What is now spread around you will become your inner life. You will take into yourself what is now the mineral kingdom, and it will become your inner part. The plant kingdom will become your inner part. What surrounds you in nature will become your inner being. You will understand now how this is connected with the first example given. You build a church for others, not for yourself. You can take into yourself a world full of majesty, beauty, and splendor, if you make the world majestic, beautiful, and splendid. To do something for the higher self is not selfish, because it is not done only for the self. This higher self will be united with all other higher selves, so that it is done for all at the same time. It is this that the Freemasons knew. The Freemason knew when he helped to build the spiritualized mineral world that this would one day become the content of his soul. And to build means nothing else than to spiritualize the mineral world. That is the significant thing. God once gave us the nature that surrounds us as mineral, plant, and animal nature. We take this into ourselves. It is not due to us that it is there. All we can do is to appropriate it for ourselves. But what we ourselves create in the world, that is what will, through ourselves, constitute our future being. The mineral world is such, we perceive. What we make out of it, we shall in the future be. What we make of the plant world, of the animal world, and of the world of men, that too we will be in the future. If you found a charitable institution or contribute something to it, what you have contributed, you will be. If a man does nothing which he can draw back in this way into his soul from outside, he will remain empty. It must be possible for man to spiritualize as much as he can of the three kingdoms of nature, for mankind also belongs thereto. To bring spirit into the whole external world, that has been the task of the secret societies of every age. You understand that must be so. Take a child who is just learning to read and write. To begin with, all the equipment is around him. Today, the child begins to learn to read. Nothing is in him yet, but the teacher, the primers, and so forth are there. So it continues until what was outside the child has been instilled into him, and the child acquires the capacity to read. And so it is with nature, too. In times to come, we shall have within us what is now spread around us. We are souls. We spring from the world soul. And we drew it in when it was spread around us. The spirit was likewise drawn in, and nature too will be drawn in by us, in order to stay within us as an active ability. That is the great thought at the basis of these secret societies, that all progress is the result of involution and evolution. Involution is the drawing in, evolution is the giving out. All situations in the universe alternate between these two processes. When you see, hear, smell, or taste nature, you breathe it in. What you see does not pass away without leaving a trace on you. The eye itself perishes, EYE, the object perishes, but the fact that you have seen something remains. You will understand now that at certain times it can be necessary for an understanding of these things to be available. We are going forward to an age when, as I recently indicated, understanding will reach right into the atom. It will be realized by the popular mind, too, that the atom is nothing else than congealed electricity. Thought itself is composed of the same substance. Before the end of our present cultural epoch, one will find, in fact, Before the end of our present cultural epoch, one will in fact have come so far that people will be able to penetrate into the atom itself. When one is able to grasp the materiality between the thought and the atom, then one will soon be able to understand how to penetrate the atom, and then nothing will be inaccessible to certain methods of working. A man standing here, let us say, will be able, by pressing a button concealed in his pocket, to explode some object at a great distance, let us say in Hamburg, just as wireless telegraphy is possible, by setting up a wave movement and causing it to take a particular form at some other place. This will be within man's power, when the occult truth, that thought and atom consist of the same substance, is applied to practical life. It is possible to conceive what might happen in such circumstances if mankind has not by then reached selflessness. Only through the attainment of selflessness will it be possible to preserve mankind from the brink of destruction. The downfall of post-Atlantean culture will be caused by the lack of morality. The Lemurian race was destroyed by fire, the Atlantean by water. Ours will be destroyed by the war of all against all. By evil, by the struggle of men with one another. Humanity will destroy itself in mutual strife. And the despairing thing, more desperately tragic than other catastrophes, will be that the blame will lie with human beings themselves. A tiny handful of men will be saved and will pass over into the sixth epoch. This tiny handful will have developed complete selflessness. The others will make use of every imaginable skill and subtlety in the penetration and conquest of the physical forces of nature, but without attaining the essential degree of selflessness. They will start the war of all against all, and that will be the cause of the destruction of our civilization. In the seventh post-Atlantean cultural epoch, to be precise, this war of all against all will break out in the most terrible way. Great and mighty forces will ensue from discoveries that will turn the entire globe into a kind of self-functioning electrical apparatus. The tiny handful will be protected in a way that cannot be discussed. Now, you will be able to picture it more clearly than was possible when I spoke of these things last time, why the good and proper form must be sought, and in what sense Freemasonry becomes aware that it must construct a building dedicated to selfless ends. It is easier to survive and pass over into the future, to the tiny handful of new humanity, with the good old forms, than out of chaos. It is easy to jeer at empty forms, but they have a deep significance. They are adapted to the structure of our period of evolution. After all, they are connected with necessary stages in human nature and the development of the human soul. Just think of it. We are living in the fifth period of the fifth great post-Atlantean epoch. We have still to live through two more periods of this great epoch. Then the seven periods of the sixth great epoch will follow, and then the seven periods of the seventh great epoch. This makes 16 stages of evolution in the future. Humanity has still to pass through these 16 stages. A man who can experience something of the conditions of existence that are possible there is to a certain degree initiated. There is a certain correspondence between the degrees of initiation and the secrets of the epochs still to come. In the, in quotes, form state of our planet, there are seven great epochs. And each of these epochs has seven sub-periods, cultural epochs, 49 conditions, therefore, in all. In the next form state of our planet, there are again 49 conditions. Thus, there are definite stages for the investigation of the secrets of future phases of evolution. The higher degrees of Freemasonry had no other aim or purpose, originally, than to be an expression of each one of the future stages of the evolution of humanity. Thus, in Freemasonry, we actually have something which has been very good, namely that a man who had attained a certain degree knew how he must work his way into the future, so that he could be a kind of pioneer. He knew, too, that one who had reached a higher degree could accomplish more. This arrangement, according to degrees, can very well be made, for it corresponds with the facts. If, therefore, it were again possible to pour a new content together with a new knowledge into these forms, much good would accrue. Freemasonry would then be imbued with real spirit once again, but content and form belong to the whole. The state of affairs today is, as I have said, the degrees are there, but nobody has really worked through them. In spite of this, however, they are not there for nothing. They will be brought to life again in the future. The fifth cultural epoch is a purely intellectual one, an epoch of egoism. We are now at the high point of egoism. The intellect is egoistical in the highest degree, and it is the hallmark of our time. And so we must make our way upward through intellect to spirituality, which was once there. Reader's aside, there's a gap in the text. End of reader's aside. The secret of secrets is this, therefore. The human being must learn how to keep silence about the paths along which his ego unfolds, and to regard his deeds, not his ego, as the criterion. The real heart of the secret lies in his deeds, and the overcoming of the ego through action. The ego must remain concealed within the deed. elimination of the interests of the ego from the on-streaming flow of karma, this belongs to the first degree. Whatever karma the ego incurs is thereby wiped out from karma. Nation, race, sex, position, religion, all these work upon human egoism. Only when mankind has overcome all these things will it be freed from egoism. You can identify in the astral body a particular color for every nation, every race, every epoch. You will always find a base color there, which the person has as a member of one of these classifications or categories. This specific color must be eliminated. The Theosophical Society works to level out the colors of the astral bodies of its adherents. They must be of like color, like in respect of the base color. This base color gives rise to a certain substance, and there's a gap in the text, bracket, called kundalini, which holds together within the human being the forces that lead eventually to the spirit, close bracket. Bringing this leveling out about will actually entail bloody war. And through such things as economic strife among nations, wars of exploitation, financial and industrial enterprises, conquests, etc., and through the adoption of certain measures, it will be more and more possible to set masses of people in motion and simply to compel them. The individual will acquire more and more power over certain masses of people. For the drift of this development is not that we will become democratic, but that we will become brutally oligarchic, in that the individual will gain more and more power. If the ennobling of morals is not achieved, then it will lead to the most brutal events. This will happen just as catastrophe by water happened to the Atlanteans. The end of Lecture 10 and the end of Part 1 of this book, The Temple Legend.